Easter Sunday, it's interesting. I have a confession to make, and the truth is I don't actually ever really like Easter. It just seems kind of too negative to me in some ways. I believe that we rise up from these lives as spirits. I believe we're spirits, and I think that's what Jesus was telling us. But so we're not going to really speak about crucifixion very much today, because that's not the heart of the story. That's not the purpose of the story. The purpose is in our resurrection. Now, in terms of crucifixion, we all really know that very well. We crucify ourselves in so many different ways, by what comes out of our mouths, by what we do, by what we say, by our behavior. So we don't need lessons in that. We're really quite good at this. What we need to do is figure out how to rise above the situations that we find ourselves in every single day. And I wanted to use, actually, we spoke about the parable of the prodigal son. It says prodigal has brother here. By the way, in the Bible, when it was first written, there were no titles on any of those. It was just continuous writing all the way through. The titles were produced much, much later in history. But originally, it was just a continuous prose from start to end. So this Bible says, I know, that's right. So someone decided how they wanted to, this is political. Someone decided how they wanted to spin everything in the Bible so that it matches up with what they want to teach. And that's just the truth. So I like to look at what the real truth is. So parable of the prodigal, say that three times real quick and you'll be right here with me. Anyway, the story, as we probably all know, is there was a father and two sons, and they owned some property and they were farming it. But the younger son, and it always tends to be the younger son who gets in trouble. It's like the older daughter, she's perfect, the rest are not so much. So the younger son went to his father and said, listen, I really want all that's mine. And just go ahead and split it up, give me mine, and I want to go and do my own thing. So the father just said, well, sure, absolutely, I'll do that for you. Now, a lot of people in today's world say, well, that's crazy. Who in their right mind would do that? I'm not going to give you your inheritance today. You're going to go squander it, or who knows? But that's what happened in the story. So the young man goes off into the city, and you can imagine there are not too many cities back then, 2,000 years ago. He goes off into the city and sees a brand new life he's never seen before, and he indulges in every possible aspect of that life. And over time, he keeps spending his money and spending his money, because his dad never told him how to put it in a bank and make interest on it, I guess. He spent all of this money and got so bad that he was, slopping pigs for somebody because he needed to eat. And then he started eating the food the pigs were eating. Now, that's about as low as we can get. So that's part of what his crucifixion was looking like. He made his own choices, his own decisions, and those did not work out real well for him. So at the very bottom of that, as we sometimes often do, we decide we have to make a new decision and start moving in a different direction. Now, he knew that he had failed in so many different ways, but he decided, okay, I know I've done this. I'm worthless. I'm at the very bottom of the barrel here, but I'm going to go home and talk to my dad and prostrate myself to him, so that he'll forgive me. But what really happens, as we probably all know, is that as he is walking back and his father sees him, his father is overjoyed to have him and showers him with gifts. Now, some people would say that's not fair, because there's another brother here who has been staying home, doing all the right things, saying all the right things, doing all the right things, helping his dad grow the farm, and yet when this erstwhile son comes back, he gets all this praise. Now, there are several things that I think that are important to look at that. It isn't that his father was overlooking him or being compassionate with him or being forgiving to him. His father simply loved him. And that story is teaching something really remarkable about what Jesus thought God was. Jesus saw God as not a punisher, not a God of retribution, not a God of anger, but even really not even a God of love, but a God that just is. And it is, and it is always there for us, regardless of where we, what we do and where we go. And that's a totally radically different view of God than the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible that he was living in at that time. So that is a revolutionary thought. I happen to believe that that's the truth actually about God. In my view, through my studies as a Unity minister, I came to believe that God is impersonal and has no human qualities. But if you think about this story, that's exactly the same God that Jesus was talking about in this story, which is remarkable to me that that was happening 2,000 years ago. You can imagine that the leaders of the Hebrew church and the temple were not real happy with this story because it was kind of throwing them under the bus and saying your God is not the only God. But in fact, that's what Jesus was really saying. There is a higher level of consciousness thinking and a higher level kind of a God that is there for you always in a totally non-judgmental way. And I think that's beautiful. The more recently I've been reading and studying a lot about Jesus and his humanity through the works of the Jesus Seminar, and there were 200 biblical scholars who studied the Bible intensively, and what they determined, which I also agree in, is that their goal was to find signs of the true historical Jesus, not the Christological Jesus, not the God Jesus, but the true Jesus that was here on this planet and on this earth. And what they determined after like 10 years of intense study was that the parables and the aphorisms in the Bible are almost assuredly words of Jesus. And when you realize that and you go through those words, you realize that his view of God was completely different. His view of God is much, much closer and if not identical to what New Thought has known for a very, very long time. So we're not exactly Christians. We're probably original Christians, in my view. At least that's my thinking anyway. So just to kind of round this up, I think that when I think of the crucifixion, which did happen, and think of Jesus, who was a real human being, one of the things the Bible tells us is that supposedly the last words Jesus said were, was that it's finished, is what he said. It's finished. I personally don't believe that's true. I think what Jesus really said was, it's just beginning. It's just beginning. Now's the time to start. And that, my friends, is what we're all going to do today. We're going to rise above all the issues of our lives and move forward because it's just beginning. My background originally was as an atheist and an agnostic, which meant I wasn't contaminated by a bunch of stuff out there, which is a really blessing because I know a lot of people have been really damaged by Christianity and by religion in general. And it grieves me to see that. I see it way too often. But it's difficult to be an agnostic or an atheist when you're young because when bad things happen, of course, you don't have this crutch that people grab onto or use at times. And I did find myself when I was about 40, I guess, in a really difficult position. I'm going to share this story with you because it's the most meaningful thing that's happened to me in my life. At that time, I was going through a divorce, and it was quite a difficult situation. And I remember one evening in my obligatory, almost single apartment, having virtually nothing, I was just at the very bottom of my mental ability to cope with what was going on. And so I was really contemplating suicide, which that's the only time it's ever happened to me, but I really understand that, because once you get so low that nothing else matters, almost anything is possible, and that's what happened to me. So I was sitting in my bedroom, pitch black, probably midnight, and was very serious about it, and there was a gun involved, so I was really serious about it, and I had a plan. And so at that moment, for some reason, I just looked up, because we all know that's where God lives, right? Right up there, that's God. I don't know why we always do that, but that's what we've been trained since we were children, I guess. So I looked up and said, "Well, God, here's the deal. I don't even know if you exist, but if you do, I need a sign right now." Now, you're not supposed to beg when you pray. You're not supposed to do that. That's the rule of praying. But you know what? When you're speaking to this inner truth that is within you and within all of us, it doesn't matter how you do it. And that's what Jesus said as well. You can do it any way you want. And so when I said that, not having really an understanding of what might happen, so I'm sitting on my bed right here, and there's a wall right there. It's a tiny apartment. And the end of the bed is here. And when I said that, this wall lit up in an oval-shaped light emanating on that wall. And it wasn't just flat, and there was no lights anywhere. It wasn't just flat, but it was emanating and coming out of the wall three-dimensionally, and it surrounded me in the most amazing pure love that I've ever experienced and can barely talk about. And in that moment, going from literally ending my life to falling back on my bed in total tears of ecstasy is the only way I can describe it. It was just the most amazing thing. And I'm a mechanical engineer by education. These things don't happen to engineers. I'm telling you, they don't. There has to be a reason. There's got to be a scientific something. But it was completely outside of my belief system at that time. When I woke up the next morning, the first thing I thought about was the fact that everything I ever thought was right and real was completely upside down. I was just shocked and amazed and totally in disbelief, actually, because I couldn't comprehend what had happened. It was just literally impossible for my little pea brain engineering mind to understand what happened. So I got up, and in that discussion with what I would have called God then, what I said was, "I will do anything I believe you guide me to do if you give me the sign." It's begging at the highest level. And so the next morning when I got up, I tried to dismiss that. I went to the bathroom, brushing my teeth, trying to completely dismiss it because I had no place for it in my mind. And as I walked out of the bathroom, trying to push it away, I heard this voice which said, but Rick, you made a commitment. And that's not what I wanted to hear. That's not what I wanted to hear at all. And I said, "Okay, fine. That's great. I did. I made a commitment. Okay, so what do you want now?" I'm talking to myself. You know, I don't know who I'm talking to. It's crazy. And I said, "Okay, what do you want me to do now?" Immediately, the clock radio, this is a million years ago, I had a clock radio. You probably remember those. And I had a clock radio, and it came on immediately. And it was Howard Caesar, who was a Unity minister in Houston, and I was in Houston at that time. And I said, my first reaction was, "Absolutely not. I am not going to church. I'm not going to do this. You got to be kidding me. This is not what I signed up for." And then it said, "But Rick," I'm serious, this has really happened. And it said, "But Rick, you made a commitment." And I said, "Fine, okay. So I had to get the phone book. You all remember phone books? I had to get the phone book out and look through and find out what Unity Church was. It turned out that it was all the way across Houston in an area where I used to live. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll do it. So I get in my car, drive all the way over there, about 45 minutes. And the Unity of Houston back then was this gigantic golden pyramid, okay? Only freaky people go into Golden Pyramid. I'm telling you, I could not think of going in that place. There's no way. I drove up to it. I saw that Golden Pyramid. I said, there's no way. I'm done. I literally drove out of the parking lot and down going home, and guess what happened? Bud Rick. Exactly. I kid you not. I said, Bud Rick, you made a commitment. I said, gosh, darn it. Can't curse up here on stage, but I would. So I turned around and parked. And it's a big, big place, probably holds 800 people. You probably know that too. And sat in the very back row. I mean, I'm way back there by Bob. Can you see me? I'm way back there by Bob. And hoping I would just hide and get through whatever this was and go home. But Howard Caesar decided that day to speak directly to me. There were 800 people in there, but he was speaking directly to me. Now, how is that possible? I've been in a lot of churches before, and usually I get so disgusted with them, I just want to leave. But this was an experience I had never had before. So Howard Caesar was speaking directly to me. Tears were pouring out of my face, and I don't cry. I didn't cry then. I really know how to do it now. And just pouring down, I was thinking people are going to be looking at this guy, this poor blubbering thing over here in this back row. And I was so glad when church was over, I just ran out, got my car, and went home. And thank goodness, really, the rest of the day was normal. Nothing supernatural happened. Nothing weird happened. Because really, that things like that don't happen to engineers. So this was Sunday. So Monday morning, I got up, and I was manager of an engineering company at that time. And I went to my office, and I was really glad that nothing else had happened that evening. I went to my office, and when I got to my desk, there was a package on my desk. And the package on my desk, I opened it, and it was a Bible. Do you know how many times engineering managers get a Bible on their desk? Like zero. We don't even get gifts. Most people throw things at us. So it was just like, no way. You've got to be kidding me. So whatever is in this universe and this intelligence that is surrounding us and ever in our presence knew that this guy needed a really big kick in the what? To push myself to know that there's even more in this world than I ever could have imagined. So I went to open it up, and it had an inscription in it, and I went to one of my engineers who put it on my desk, and I said, Valdis, I really appreciate this. But why? Why did you do this? And he said, I don't know, Rick. He said, all I know is that I was hearing, get Rick a Bible, get Rick a Bible, all week, all weekend long. Now, if you didn't believe in something before that happened, trust me, you definitely believed in amazing things after that, even though I don't fully understand what it is. I just know that there's something amazing and powerful in this universe. It led me, because I made a commitment, right? So my life just exploded open because I was seeing these things that I was being asked to go do. I mean, I was being asked to go firewalk. Who in their right mind goes to firewalk and walk on hot coals? Well, I did. I did it 7 times. And it was an amazing experience. And it taught me that what we believe is real is not real. How can you do something you can't do, but you do it? It's a dramatic lesson in life and expands your brain and your mind so much. But even more importantly than that, as I kept doing what appeared to be unusual things and traveling and going to Montana and going to retreats and yoga retreats, and yoga is really cool, by the way, yoga retreats, I began to meet people all over the country, and it turns out that I was being led to make relationships with people who were going to eventually save my life. Now, if you don't think following your bliss and following your heart and listening to the spirit within you is important, because it doesn't seem like it's all connected, The truth is, it is all connected. Everything we do is connected. So that's part of my story. So I really believe that we are about resurrecting ourselves through the difficulties and troubles in our life, and there's always, always a way. It doesn't mean that we're always going to be cured if we have an illness, but there is always healing available in every single moment, in every single situation. And if we make the best of it and use our thoughts and minds and look within our hearts, those things are absolutely possible. Thank you so much. Meditation. I know. Thank you. She's like my other wife. Rick,
get up about it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we all have those spouses sometimes. Let's just take a few moments and relax into this moment and begin to go into our meditation time together. And think about those moments in your life that have been perhaps difficult, that you have overcome and risen above. Think about those moments now that you may be struggling with, and realize that the answer is what this community is all about, and that is love. Love in all of its forms. Let it surround you and let you, so that you know that it's real, so you know that it's an integral part of each and every one of us. Love is the answer. Go in deeper now and see a moment where you want to add special attention to it, because it is in our intentions and prayer and belief that we can surmount the difficulties and problems of our lives. Now let's take a few moments now in silence as we go into these thoughts. A special situation in your life. And just hold this in love. Surround those situations in love. And now as we begin to come back into the room, as you're ready, just know that it's already done. Know that whatever it is that you need is already on its way, and that we are the engines to make it happen. It's not a mystical, magical thing. We pray, we set our intentions, and the truth will come to us as it is, in its right time and right order. Thank you.